Welcome to Beyond the OR with Dr. Kevin Brenner. I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills. I want to take you beyond my world of plastic surgery, diving deep into exciting hot topics and delving even deeper into compelling characters that I've met along the way. We'll be talking with attorneys, actors, comedy writers, Navy SEALs, and many other fascinating and inspiring people with truly intriguing stories to share. So let's jump right in. Welcome back to Beyond the OR. We have a really great episode today, and today I'd like to welcome one of LA's top 10 holistic practitioners. She is Dr. Nikki Gill, based in Tarzana. She's also been named one of Tarzana's best, or the best, right, in Tarzana holistic practitioners. She hails from Washington, University of Seattle for undergraduate, and then Bastyr University for her naturopathic training. And certainly not least important, is a very important member of my breast team. So welcome to the show. I always say, everyone calls you Dr. Nikki, right?
Yeah.
I always say Dr. Nikki Gill. But tell us your whole last name, because I'll probably botch it.
Oh, it's all good. It's Dr. Nikki Argonzoni Gill.
There you go.
Yes, that's, but everyone says Dr.
Argonzonio?
Nikki. Argonzoni Gill. Like macaroni.
Argonzoni Gill.
Macaroni Argonzoni.
Argonzoni. Argonzoni Gill. Yes. I like it.
Yes. So, but Dr. Nikki is what everyone calls me. If you say Dr. Argonzoni, most people don't even know who I am. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why I go with Dr. B. Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
So, Dr. Nikki and I met years ago when we were kind of putting together our whole breast team, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole point of kind of bringing you and I together was to really bring Eastern medicine and Western medicine ideas together to take care of primarily our breast implant illness patients. But certainly that's not the only thing you do.
No.
But tell us, if you will, like how did you get into naturopathic medicine in the first place?
Oh, that's a good question. Part of it, I think, was growing up with a lot of family members that were ill. A lot of people in my family were ill. No solutions, always, you know, always having to go through some traumatic experience in terms of how they would get better. And I think that always like stuck with me over at my childhood and then throughout that. And then I got into IVF, into infertility. I worked in IVF for a long period of time and saw like all the different things that could be done for infertility beyond just IVF and whatnot. And so I got the wheels turning in my head of like, what would I want to do going forward to help as many people as I could? And though I do feel there's a really great place for conventional medicine, I think we can't be without that. I do think there are other ways to approach care that are sometimes less invasive. And so, and using nature is pretty amazing. I mean, that's how it was done many, many years before any of us ever existed. So that really appealed to me. So I decided to look into naturopathic medicine, and lo and behold, 3 miles up the road was Bastyr University. And so I applied, and I think I talked my way in, and that's how I got in. And so,
it was meant to be.
Yeah, I think so.
So I think there's a common misconception in the general public about naturopathic medicine. I'm guilty as charged. You know, I just always grew up thinking that medicine was Western medicine, conventional medicine, how I was trained. But the true, you know, and I think a lot of people think that naturopathic medicine is just about preventative medicine. They don't necessarily consider it to be the same as internal medicine would be in conventional medicine. But it's not just preventative medicine, right? It's preventative medicine. It's also treatment for various disorders.
Absolutely.
But like what's the hub of naturopathic medicine, and how do you blend that together with conventional medicine?
So I think the one thing to understand about naturopathic medicine is the doctors that are in naturopathic medicine go through naturopathic medical school. So usually our programs are pretty similar to conventional medical schools. But then after your second year or so, we start branching out into herbs and learning all the things that we use in nature. And so we learn to bring the science, from modern science, and bring it together with the wisdom of Earth, right? Mother Earth and what she brings. And so we take those two worlds and we put them together to bring the best that we can in terms of treatment to patients.
That makes sense too, because a lot of medication was brought from a natural herb, right? So some of the medication,
most medication, yeah.
Right,
derived so, from plants.
Yeah, so that would really, really make sense. Like mm-hmm. that really resonates with me.
Yes.
I mean, and I think, and how does kind of how you're using?
How do I use it?
Natural medications. How does that differ from, let's say, like Chinese herbs, herbal medicine? Because I mean, it really, all three actually have sort of the basis in the same idea. I mean,
sure.
If you think of like digoxin, digitalis, right, which is a heart medication.
Yes.
It's used for heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
It's derived from a plant, right?
That's so right.
If you're chewing the plant or taking the pill, it's the end effect is the same thing. Right.
Well,
I'd rather chew the plant.
Yeah. Right. I think so too.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a lot of simplicity in naturopathic medicine. For one, like a lot of things that we do tend to be more simpler in terms of like formulations. You know, usually if it's a plant, it's that one plant, and then you may have vitamins and nutrients that are put into that. So in naturopathic medicine, we really look at the whole person as much as possible. So we're looking at addressing not just what's going on physically. We're thinking about the mental. We're thinking about psychological and even spiritual at times, and seeing where people are and learning, understanding where people are in their process. And then from there, you evaluate, you know, what needs to be done to help them not just get better, but kind of go beyond that and then thrive. And so I think we really look at the individual, and I think that comes with time too. You do have to spend more time getting to know an individual and what their environment is like, where they're coming from. Do you work 16 hours a day or are you stay at home mom? Like, these are all factors that play into how you would proceed with treatment for a patient. And so I think that's one way that we're unique in terms of what we do. But we also focus a lot on like the body's ability to heal itself. Right, and removing the cause. So we're going to look at vitamins. We're going to look at nutrients. Are you depleted in nutrients? Are you depleted in vitamins? What pathways, thinking about pathways in terms of like your health, heart health or hormone health, and looking at deficiencies in those pathways and where we need to refill those deficiencies so that we can help your body do for itself what it's not doing right now. So in that way, I think we're very different. And I think a lot of people are appeal to that. And so we really look at the whole individual to try to lift them up and give them sustainable health and long-term health overall.
And I think that, you know, guilty as charged, Western trained physicians, even though we learn most of what you just talked about in medical school, that's not the goal for most Western trained physicians. The goal for Western trained physicians is to go through medical school and then pick a specialty to go into. So you get pigeonholed very early into a specialty, whether that's internal medicine or pediatrics or you know, orthopedic surgery, urology, cardiology. And we all end up, for the most part, with the exception of maybe family practitioners and internists, becoming very super specialized early on and only focusing on that. And even though we have the background, we tend to ignore everything else. I don't know if it's intentional or just because we're focused on doing what we have to do, right? So so cardiologist is not going to be doing a nutritional analysis on someone, even though that may be super important, right? And that's kind of why we kind of started thinking, why not bring it all together in the first place?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
I also find that it's interesting to me, because I've done some holistic stuff, but it seems like holistic medicine almost has more blood work, more detailed blood work than the kind of blood work you get when you go get a physical.
Sure.
Right.
And I think that that's really important. And so much is missed that you don't even know when you go a holistic route and you're getting hormones checked, you're getting all this stuff that doctors don't really consider in a physical that has a lot to do with your health.
That's true.
So why do you think that in the Western medicine, they don't do what you guys are doing, which is really checking every box off?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think it comes back to the holistic standpoint of like what we do. So for example, like if you come to me with a thyroid issue, I'm not just thinking thyroid. I'm thinking about all the supporting factors that play into your thyroid health, right? So we're thinking adrenal health. We're thinking your gut health. We're looking at all those pieces that contribute to why your thyroid's not optimally functioning. So in that, we're going to test all those factors, right? So we're going to look at your thyroid, but we're going to look at your adrenals. And then I may say to you, we probably need to look at your gut. And then once we look at all those pieces, we put it together and address all of those pieces and then push forward with a plan that will help address your thyroid. But really, we're addressing everything that needs to be addressed for your thyroid.
For the function of the thyroid,
right.
Which makes a lot of sense.
That's right.
But GI health is kind of your epicenter, right? I mean, you've focused a lot of your work on mm-hmm. GI health, GI detoxification, treatment of various GI mm-hmm. disorders. You're not a gastroenterologist.
Nope.
But you certainly specialize in managing mm-hmm. GI disorders and promoting gut health, right? Mm-hmm. So let's delve into that a little bit. Like, how do you do it? What are you looking out for? What are the most common GI conditions that probably most of us are suffering from that may not even realize?
Sure, yeah, it's always a surprise, right? So gut health, I feel, and this is how I was trained in naturopathic medical school, they always said to us, like, if you learn nothing else, learn how to treat the gut, because the gut is the foundation for all of your health. You learn your gut, you learn to do the gut, you can help anybody. And so I found that to be so true that I'm this far in my career and I'm like, that is so true. So in terms of gut health, I see a lot of people coming in for, you know, gas and bloating. That's really common. Lots of gas and bloating. Things that a lot of people don't want to talk about. So people are not always comfortable having a casual conversation about, you know, I have gas and bloating. I fart a lot, like all of these things. And you know, or I burp a lot, or I have diarrhea 5 times a day. Like, these are things people don't want to talk about. So this is what I get to hear usually on the daily. And so we talk about all the factors that play into that. And that could be parasites, that could be worms, that could be candida overgrowth, that could be high inflammation within your gut, that could be related to even Crohn's colitis. And then overgrowth of bacteria like SIBO, small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. So these are a lot of the things that people are coming in with, and a lot of people are not even aware that that's what's actually going on with them. And removing that cause, so removing, say, C. diff or treating a parasite, can be life-changing for a lot of people. And I tell people that's a very big deal, because in your gut, 95% of your serotonin levels are made in your gut. So serotonin is primarily made in the gut. So it affects their mood. So it's not just affecting like how they're able to digest things, because serotonin is tied to gut motility, but it's also affecting their moods, their happy level, their ability to stay happy, their ability to calm down and relax. So a lot of people find that their overall being is improved when we can address the parasite, and we could address the worm, where we can address E. coli for that matter. So I think it has a huge impact on people's overall health.
And the immune system.
Right? And the immune system.
People tend to forget that the layer that lines your intestines has a huge, it has like its own entire antibody production.
That's right.
System. It's a whole immune system in and of itself. If you think about it, and this kind of blends into my next question. My next question is, how much of this stems from our diet, right?
Oh, yeah.
We already know the answer to that, but we're going to talk about it. But it's you know, we are what we eat. That's what I've always learned. That's what we were taught in medical school. That's what I was taught when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And to be perfectly honest, most of us have a really shitty diet, right? So like how much is diet playing into your immune health? How much is it playing into all these various other GI disorders?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I personally, I've experienced, just because several years ago, I just kind of cut dairy out of my diet, and it made it, I'm a different human being because of it.
Uh-huh. And it's so hard to do.
Yeah. So hard. I love cheese.
Me too.
I always say I love cheese, but cheese don't love me.
So. Oh, yeah.
but you know, I don't know how much of that is just lactose, how much of it is just everything's just so overprocessed now and, you know, genetically modified.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about diet and nutrition, because we guilty as charged, don't learn nearly enough in medical school, and it's not really, even though we talk about it, I actually learned more about nutrition when I was a general surgery resident.
Wow.
Taking care of really sick patients than I did in medical school.
Wow, that's quite profound. Wow. Yeah, when I was in medical school, it was from day one, they were beating food and nutrition down our throat from day one, and they even, one of our courses was they put us into a cooking class. And they made us design brochures and presentations for different conditions like osteoarthritis, Crohn's disease. And so we would not only have to learn about, you know, what those conditions were, but if you're going to treat it with food, what would you put together? What would you recommend to your patient? And then how would that affect them? I remember that, like, that stuck with me.
Wow.
I was like, whoa, okay. And I'm like, you're really going to learn food. And so coming back to that food question, I think 50% of what's going on here is related to what we're putting in our mouth. And frankly, if you ask me what the other 50% is, I would say stress. So I think the two.
You hear that?
Right. Well, we had this conversation,
are you
right?
Channeling my mother? I don't understand.
Yes, because he's a stress monger.
You just gave me a second occupation on Saturdays. And you're telling me that I need to manage my stress. My goodness.
We had this talk, didn't we? Yes, say that doctors are the worst patients. We had this conversation. We're like,
oh, yes, I'm sure.
We are. And I mean, I don't know how much of it is that we're just sort of, most of us are very type A, right? I mean, you have to in order to kind of get through the curriculum and then to build a practice and to go through residency. Mm-hmm. Like, you really have to have that. But, you know, we're at least I was always trained, you know, patients come first. You have to take care of the patients. And we often do that to our own neglect, like very often, starting in medical school and residency. I mean, when I was a surgery resident, you ate when you had time. It wasn't like, there wasn't like meal breaks. Mm-hmm. You didn't get stress breaks. You know, it was like you had surgery. If it goes till 6 p.m., it goes till 6 p.m. If it goes till 2 in the morning, it goes till 2 in the morning. And, you know, there's no one like, hey, Kevin, you know, you look like you're a little tired. Go take a rest.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're like, sorry. I'm like,
I hope they give you diapers for those long operations.
Oh, my goodness.
Not even going to touch that. But it's just part of the training, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's just passed down from one generation to another generation. And, I mean, when I finished my surgery residencies, I mean, my dietary habits were awful and continued on for a fairly long time. Mm-hmm. Not until, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago did I start changing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Like, I don't know if it's just me or probably just me, but I'm interested. You guys, did you know serotonin was formed in the gut? I thought it was formed in the brain for some reason.
Well, it is.
It is.
It's both.
But you see,
Primarily in your gut.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What, if you could give a tip to our listeners, like what supplement or what tip can you give them that everybody should, regardless of their health or, you know, or if they want to better their health, like what is a good tip or a good supplement that they can take?
I mean, if you're trying to hit the whole body with like one thing, you're always going to hit the gut so that the gut can impact the rest of the body.
Right.
You'd always want to be, I would say one of two things. I always say probiotics or colostrum. And I think colostrum's incredibly powerful. Colostrum helps build your immunity up in your gut. 70% of your immunity sits in your gut. So probiotics help with immunity, but I think colostrum packs the biggest punch when it comes to immunity. So when I'm trying to rebuild immunity within the gut for a patient, colostrum is one of my favorite things to go to.
I took some And it may be a little nauseous. Do you have to get used to it in the beginning?
It depends on, like, I mean, if you're doing capsule or powder. So some people prefer powders, others to capsules.
Okay.
You have to time it, too, in terms of when you take it, because you should be taking it usually about 15 to 30 minutes prior to eating food. So,
okay.
So things like that. But the colostrum is, like, really where it's at.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Colostrum. Mm-hmm. See, now that I would know. But on your website, you have, like, probably like a list of like 10 most common supplements that you recommend in general. Is that just sort of like right in the middle of the bell curve, the 10 most common
things
that people should be taking?
Yeah.
And what are those?
I think there's a probiotic there. Oh gosh. I think there's also having to do, it might be echinacea. I can't remember. I think is one of them.
Magnesium.
Yeah. There's some basic stuff there, but usually when I list stuff, I'm looking at things that hit more than one thing. So the way I think about things is I try to hit more than one thing at one time, because otherwise you're going to take like 50 supplements to take care of this, take care of that. But actually,
which is what I now do. I have a baggie. It takes, 15 minutes to take all these pills. Mm-hmm. And it's time consuming.
It's expensive.
You know, I always thought, like, and I've always been told and thought that if you eat a normal balanced diet, that you should be getting all, not only calories that you need, but also nutrients, electrolytes, mm-hmm. supplements and stuff that your body really requires. But that's not really true, right?
Not necessarily true. But also, if you have a compromised gut, you're just not going to absorb things the way you should, which is why I say that's one of my favorite places to start. Because once we kind of clear the gut out and we clear the way for things to be better absorbed, then oftentimes people come in and take less than what they started out with, because they don't need so much anymore, because now what they're eating is actually getting absorbed in their body the way it should. And people notice the difference. They actually notice it. And so, yeah, when your gut's in a good place, you can take less and eat more and be better off for it.
And how do you track that improvement or lack of improvement, and how often?
Yeah, I often recommend a stool test for people, so I get to see the state of the gut. And I say to people, ideal is twice a year for a stool test, but if you only do it once a year, that's better than nothing. Because then you get to see what bacteria you need, if you have any overgrowth, what needs to be cleared out. If you have inflammation, how aggressive do you need to be about getting that inflammation down? Is there leakiness within the gut, so increased gut permeability? Do we need to close that off? And so the stool test provides you all that information. It's very valuable.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I really recommend that to people at least once a year.
What do you think is probably the most common, I don't want to say disease, well, I guess it's a disease entity or problem that people present with to you? What's the most common thing that people present with?
So are you referring to like gut conditions, or are you referring to like the culprits for making people sick?
Well, I mean, I think there's you probably have a portion of your practice, I'm sure you do, mm-hmm. portion of your practice that is preventative care, mm-hmm. right? So patients are just coming mm-hmm. to you for annual physical exam, mm-hmm. Nutritional evaluation, mm-hmm. and you're just seeing them once a year, right? Mm-hmm. But then you have patients who have a specific problem, like we just talked about the other day. Mm-hmm. I sent you somebody who mm-hmm. I think is going to really benefit. But like in terms of, and maybe it's too varied, I don't know, but like what would be like the most common
things I see in my office,
like acute problem mm-hmm. that you would see that you can kind of fix acutely and then sort of get them into the management mode?
Oh, that's a good question. So what I've seen over the years is more people come in after they've been everywhere else. So they come in, and usually when they come to me, it's not usually acute. It's already been chronic. So my job is to take apart the case and figure out what they've done in terms of their care, what they're doing now, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and then play detective and order the proper labs, get the stool test done if I need to, and look at the actual, what they're presenting with, and having listened to them in their first appointment, make sure I have good notes about what's been happening with them symptomatically. And then I put it together to bring them a plan. So usually when they're coming in, it's unfortunately, I wish, some days I joke and I go, can I have a cold? how about a flu today?
It's going to go away in a few days anyway.
Right. I'm like, can I have something like that? But if anything, I mean, I might get people coming in with yeast overgrowth. I might get them coming in with UTIs. But more often than not, it's either gut related stuff, like their gut's killing them. Gas and bloating has been the theme. The other thing that I see a ton of is anxiety levels have gone up significantly since COVID. So people are coming in with anxiousness and their hearts are, you know, palpitations in their hearts, and they can't understand why they're so anxious or how can they calm themselves down. And then the other thing that's always hot and has always been hot since the beginning of my career has been hormones. Lots and lots and lots of hormones, because people menopause every day. And men with andropause too.
Right.
So I see a combination. It's usually that combo that walks through my door.
And a couple?
A couple. It's never just one thing.
Coming in. So I have a few.
So can you walk us through like a typical patient that comes in with an acute-ish problem, mm-hmm. or a specific problem? Maybe it's not acute. Maybe mm-hmm. it's chronic. Like, they come in your office, and what's the process?
Okay. So they'll come in and... And basically my first words to them are, so you're going to teach me about you today. I'm like, I'm here to listen. Teach me about you. What's been happening? How long has it been happening? So I'll get all the details about all the fun details about what's been happening with you. And so we'll talk about a lot of times. One of the first things people will say is my anxiety is off the charts. And I'm telling you, that has been like almost an everyday thing since COVID. I've seen that go up dramatically and understandably. So they'll say, I'm really anxious and my stomach's killing me. I have a lot of gas and bloating, or I have really bad constipation. And then they'll say, I'm having hot sweats at night. And this is men say this to me as well. So men and women alike. And so I'll kind of dig around and ask questions around that. And then I'll recommend we get some blood work done. So, and usually some of that blood work will look at adrenal health. That's usually one of the first places to go, is looking at the adrenal health. And then, oftentimes thyroid's another piece to look at. And then I'll look at inflammatory markers. And I'll look at your vitamin D and your B12 levels, nutritional aspects of your health. And I'll learn about what your breakfast, lunch, and dinner looks like. And I always tell my patients, I'm like, I'm not here to judge. I'm here to help. So if you don't tell me, I can't help you. So they have to spill the beans and tell me everything that's been happening with their diet. And that's a big part. And so we circle back around at the end of the appointment. I tell them, here's what I learned about you today. And correct me if I'm wrong. These are your goals. And then I say to them, this is how we're going to try to get the answers we need to help you get to where you need to go. And so oftentimes my patient, majority, I'd say 99% of the times, my patient walks out of the office with a lab form and a stool test combined.
What are your thoughts on fasting? You know, the craze right now
is intermittent fasting.
I'm not the person that wakes up in the morning starving. Like, I don't like to eat till like noon. Mm-hmm. So what are your theories about, is breakfast the most important meal, or is it better to fast?
I think, honestly, it differs for everyone. I think we can't take that concept and apply it to everybody. And I think that's a mistake we make anyway in modern medicine anyhow.
Right.
So I think you really have to look at the individual. And if you're saying like, you're not hungry, and fasting works for you, then fasting works for you. For some people, it doesn't work. And a lot of the people that it doesn't work for are my people that have like low blood sugar levels, who have a hard time maintaining, you know, nice, even blood sugar levels. And so they get dizzy, they get nauseous. And I'm like, yeah, fasting's probably not for you. But in terms of what fasting achieves, I think fasting is fantastic for a lot of things, especially for resetting the body and also helping to, in cancer, I think it's really, really great. Fasting's very, prominent, very prevalent amongst my cancer patients, and they do really well with it. So I do think there's a really good place for it. And I do think it's great for weight loss as well. I know a lot of people are doing keto, and the fasting aspect really helps them achieve their weight goals, which I think is fantastic. But again, I don't think it applies to everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
So just piggybacking off of something you said a minute ago, and then I want to talk about cancer treatment. But you said checking adrenal health is like number one priority oftentimes, but it's not so easy to do.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And you know, because you can't just check cortisol level one time during the day.
That's right.
Well, first of all, there's metabolites of cortisol. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you can't just check a cortisol level at your 10 a.m. appointment and expect that that's going to reflect a picture of someone's 24-hour cortisol cycle. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So how? What's the best way of doing that? Is it, do you have to check multiple times during the day? Are you doing urine tests for cortisol metabolites and and other things that we pick up on? Mm-hmm. Because it's, and cortisol, there's also free cortisol and bound cortisol. But it's like, it's really tricky to check. It's not like thyroid hormone, right? You can check a TSH, you can check a free T4, free T3, mm-hmm. and that's fairly good reflection of what's going on all day long, but not with cortisol. So how do you approach that?
Yeah, the gold standard for checking cortisol actually is salivary. And so you do a salivary sample, and it's usually like pretty much 24 hours throughout the day. So you want it morning, midday, mid-evening, nighttime, and then even before you go to bed. So ideal, and there's a lot of tests out there that will do at least 4 collections, but that's more reflective of what your cortisol levels are doing. But in addition to looking at that, the other aspects that I look at are like pregnenolone, DHEA, and people don't know this, but 15% of your testosterone is made by your adrenal glands. So it is a very big adrenal hormone to be looking at. So that's something I look at as well.
But, and the term adrenal fatigue, mm-hmm. I feel like everyone and their mother is using this term. I feel like patients come to my office and they've been told by some practitioner, like, oh, I suffer from adrenal fatigue. Well, adrenal fatigue is probably not something that you would find in most medical textbooks.
That's right.
Most endocrinology textbooks, mm-hmm. right? I feel like it's overused, and I feel like it's probably a misdiagnosis most of the time. Mm-hmm. What is adrenal fatigue? Mm-hmm. And how do you know if someone actually has adrenal fatigue?
So when I look at adrenals and whatnot, I mean, first of all, if I'm testing all your adrenal hormones and they're all subpar, you're pretty darn close to adrenal fatigue. But majority of the time, that is not the case. What most people have is adrenal insufficiency, where their adrenals are not firing off all their adrenal hormones appropriately. So
it's not adrenal failure. I mean, adrenal failure is a disaster.
Disaster, yes.
Right? So it's just that it's sluggish.
That's right. It's sluggish. That's right. That's right. And so most people have adrenal insufficiency, not adrenal fatigue. You're right. I think that terminology is very well overused.
And how do you treat adrenal insufficiency?
You're just going to pretty much, you can supplement a lot of the adrenal hormones. But in addition to that, I mean, you're going to look at the gut, right? So it comes back to the gut and like how you're actually fixing the gut. So, because you might be able to get those adrenal hormones up on your own. So you're making sure that the supporting cast is all in place to help support the adrenals on their own, to get them firing off on their own.
So if someone actually is adrenal insufficient, does have adrenal fatigue, if you will, it's treatable.
It's like treatable.
You can kind of boost the adrenal function. Mm-hmm. There are ways to boost it.
Yes.
Mostly supplemental.
Mostly herbs and diet and vitamins that can help with that. And lifestyle changes. I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of this is like lifestyle,
you
right?
Just meditate your way to adrenal function.
Right. Yeah. That makes the two of us. Yeah.
Okay. So that now I told you we'd get back to cancer treatment. You know, most people, I'm the same way, where if you're trained Western medicine, like there's, for most different types of cancers, and people often group cancer together, and I don't think anyone can do that because they're all so different. But, you know, the way I'm trained, like you have cancer, for the most part, you got to cut it out and then, you know, just determine whether or not it's spread and then treat the spread. And that usually involves surgery, chemotherapy, radiation, or some combination of the three. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone that I went to medical school with had ever considered any sort of holistic approach to treating cancer. Yeah. And I've had patients who've come in who've had, let's say, breast cancer or had a recurrence and then don't want to go through conventional medicine and just say they're going to holistic their way through this, which I always recommend against. In and of by itself, right? Because I think they're complementary, right?
Absolutely.
But there are people who kind of take it to extremes. They're like, okay, well, I have this huge fungating cancer. It's going to get better with herbs. Well, it's not going to get better with herbs. You still need surgery. You still need X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. So how does the average patient which is always, you know, it's always anxiety producing when someone is diagnosed with any type of cancer. Like, how do you go from that diagnosis to saying, okay, now what the fuck do I do?
Right.
I got to find an oncologist. I got to find a surgical oncologist for whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then how do you integrate in alternative therapies mm-hmm. with that regimen?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the cancer patients I work with, I always say, provide a lot of adjunctive care. So I think there's a place for all of it. And I think when you're dealing with cancer, you need a team of some sort, a team that's going to support you. So you're going to need your oncologist, and you may choose to go down the chemo route, which I think a lot of times is the smarter thing to do in many cases. But how aggressive and all that, you have to have proper guidance for that. And so I come in and I help support whatever it is you're doing on that front. And so I may actually recommend vitamins, nutrients, or things to help with the side effects, like burns in the mouth or fatigue or things like that. I can help with that. I mean, there's even ozone therapy as well that can support that. But there are people who want to go the natural, like completely natural route, depending on where they are. I mean, if you're like stage three, stage four, I'm like, probably not a good idea at this point. And I'll be honest with you, because I mean, frankly, I always give them the example of like, if I got shot, I'm like, I wouldn't want you to run and grab me some herbs and throw it on my wound. Like, get me to the ER and right. take the bullet out. You know, like, you know, let's,
right.
yeah. So when I put it in perspective that way, they go, oh, that makes sense. And so I tell them, like, you know, for where you're at, you do need to see an oncologist. You do need guidance on that front. I'll come in once you see your oncologist, find out what they're going to have you do. I'll come in and I'll support whatever it is they're doing to make it have a bigger punch and to make sure you don't have the nasty side effects that can come from some of the treatments, which we all know can't happen. So that's where I stand with that. But there are centers now out there that are integrative centers. And some of those integrative centers are amazing because they bring conventional and natural medicine together, and the patients really, really benefit from that. So I'm really supportive of that.
Oh, wow. It's amazing. We're going to have to wrap up soon, but before
we have to ask her.
About the show.
TV show. So
we know about some exciting news.
Exciting
right?
news for you. I mean, obviously you're an expert in alternative medicine, right?
Yeah.
And now you're gonna become an outspoken expert.
Yeah, an outspoken.
What is happening in your world?
In my world.
You have a new TV show coming out.
I do. I have a TV show coming out this Wednesday, June 21st.
Woo!
Yes.
What's it called?
It's going to be called The Heal and Health with Dr. Nikki. So
oh, wow.
H-E-A-L and then health. So, and it's really, it's going to be fun because I'm going to, so to speak, poke the bear a little bit. And basically what it's about is talking about the healing aspect of health. I feel like in our country, we're like always looking at treatment, diagnosis, right? Diagnosis, treatment.
Right.
I'm like, but we're not really treating the person. And I feel like the psychological aspect, spiritual aspect of our health get missed all the time. And in fact, has a bigger impact on our overall health. And so that means going to some pretty dark places that can be very uncomfortable. And so I'm here to say, let's go there. It's time. We need to go there. We need to dig into that because the root word of health is heal. And so, right. you know,
I love that.
Right. And we overlook that. And that's why I call it the heal and health. And so, I'm going to be there and say, let's go there. This sucks. It's hard. It's
yeah, that's awesome.
It's painful, but it's a huge part of our overall well-being. In fact, it's probably the biggest part of our overall well-being.
Ooh, we got a woman out there.
You already got two viewers. I'm excited to see it. How am I going to be able to watch you?
You can go to bold, B-O-L-D, brave, B-R-A-V-E, TV.com. And you just go there, I will be 7 p.m. PST on Wednesdays. Starting Wednesdays, I've got 6 months worth of shows coming.
Wow, so, yeah, amazing.
There's quite a bit happening. And then you can, on the East Coast, it'll be 10 p.m. It'll be live streaming. And the first show will be just me. And then after that, we'll be meeting some amazing people from all over, talking about conditions, but not just conditions, but about people. Like, I'm really interested in learning about people and their healing journeys. So you'll be able to catch me there. And apparently they said you just go to Wednesday and look for my show at 7 p.m., click on it, and then you'll be able to see it. But if you don't catch it, I'll be on over 40 different TV platforms. So you'll find me on YouTube, you'll find me on Spotify, Amazon, everywhere you can think of. So
awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
All right. Before we wrap up,
yes,
I always ask my guests one question. It's not hard. Don't be nervous. No, I'm always curious because I like people's genesis stories. But if had you not gone into naturopathic medicine, had you not gone to that route, what do you think you'd be doing with your life?
Oh, right that now? Was easy. My first love, my first passion was dance. I would have been a professional dancer, hands down.
Oh wow!
Yeah, hands down. Like that was my greatest love. And but my mother, I come from a single parent. My mother was always like, you know, when you reach 60, nobody's going to want to look at your legs. I'm like,
that's not necessarily
right. I'm like, come on, mom, you know. And so she's like, spoken like a true Latina. She always had that like zest for life. So
oh
like,
yes,
you go use your brains and then go dance after you use your brains.
Oh,
so
funny.
So
are you still dancing?
I don't dance as much as I want, but that is my goal, is to get back into dancing more.
My youngest daughter is a dancer.
She must be so happy, because that was always my happy
space.
She'll
probably never go to naturopathic school.
Absolutely. Well, I think that had a lot to do with why I went in naturopathic medicine too. It's because I've always been a creative individual, and with naturopathic medicine, you can get creative in terms of how you present to your patients and how you help them. So I think that just kind of like was consistent with who I was as an individual. But yeah, if I could have, I'd be dancing salsa, merengue, bachata, like every day.
Oh,
every
yes.
Day. Now you're speaking Elizabeth's
right?
language.
Right? Every day, right? Every day. That would be my thing.
Well, I'm excited. We have a Latina, a woman on TV talking about holistic health. It's amazing. I'm going to come and see you. I can't wait. And we should probably, unfortunately, we could talk to you forever, but we can't. So if you can look into this camera and tell everybody where they can find you, Dr. Nikki.
Sure. So my website is www.wellnesswithdrnikki, that's drnikki with a double K.com. You can also reach my office at 818-654-6365. You can catch me on Instagram. I believe it's under Dr. Nikki Gill. And I think Facebook has the same thing. And if I could remember my other ones, I would tell you, but that's the ones I have for you now. Thank you.
But you'll hear them on your show, probably.
You'll hear them on my show.
Yes.
Yes, for
right,
sure.
Well, we look forward to it. Thank you for coming.
My pleasure.
This was very educational.
Yeah.
Even for me, right? I'm learning more and more about holistic medicine.
We all learn from each other.
I know.
Absolutely.
So helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to Beyond the OR with Dr. Brenner. Make sure to subscribe, like, and follow so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, hit me up on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Kevin Brenner MD and KevinBrennerMD.com.